So we lived there for 7 years. In the meantime, I had another child. And also in the meantime, I had tried working. I went to work at Lockheed.
Why was that?
Because we didn't have any money. One time when I paid the bills, and we just had the one paycheck, I had $12, or not $12, very little, maybe 20, to live on for 2 weeks, to eat for food. And even though prices were much cheaper than they are now, believe me, I was so poor. I had to borrow money from my mother. By then I had learned to, I knew how to drive, but I hadn't gotten my driver's license, but I got it out of desperation so that I could go see my mother and borrow money every once in a while. And see the children. I mean, I wanted my mother to see the children. I wanted to see my mother. I had been very close to my mother, and I didn't want to lose that bond. And I felt that it was important for the children to know who their family was. I also started to invite Mrs. Price out to the house on weekends. We would go over and pick her up on a Friday. The poor thing, she was working, but she came out, and she didn't like the valley. I would go out on weekends and pick up my mother and bring her out. She didn't like it. Everybody hated the valley. But they came out. And I was inviting people from Whittier and from West Covina. These were people that I had grown up with and that I felt very much at home with. And I was begging them to come out, even though I couldn't afford to feed them hamburgers. we'd make it stretch. And they were in the same boat, so they understood. And I, oh my goodness, how I loved those people.
Did you ever think about moving out of the valley?
I begged my husband to move out. However, he said, and it's true, that there was an ordinance in the city charter that specified that city employees had to live in the city. And the San Fernando Valley was a city, and that is why we moved to the valley. And West Covina, Whittier, and all of that area, those points were county, and we could not live there, and he said, forget it, we're never going to move there. So, I don't know how many times when times were tough for Roy and I would consider leaving and moving back and going hacking it all by myself, and somehow I always came back, and it was a home, and I had to go. We went on. I think every wife in there would go back to their mother in St. Louis, Chicago, and New York with the kids and think about never coming back again, because there wasn't, we were all working hard and trying and all, but I don't know if we were all really happy. There were doubts. And still, I don't think we had any choice but to go on.
What kind of social things did you and your husband do during those years?
Let's see. First, as I said, inasmuch as we these people were, we were all total strangers. I didn't feel close. I could not be myself. So I think the very first time that I thought I could afford to have a little open house or something, I invited everybody from Whittier, West Covina, that, you see, they had moved to the track houses, that, and the, all those people from the apartments, they were as lonely as I was, because they were all over the place. They had bought homes. And you know, they all came all the way out to the valley, and we did the very same thing. These are the ones that I was comfortable with. It. I could be myself. The food was agreeable. The company was agreeable. We could laugh. We could joke. We relaxed.
Were many of them Mexican?
No, by then I had learned to separate the friends. For my husband's sake, I hadn't really introduced him to my set of friends. And they went to the wedding, they were friends, but he didn't really incorporate them into our lives. Mm-hmm. You see, he didn't know anything about the Mexican people. And I didn't want to make waves and force anybody upon anybody. And so I kept up my friendships, my friendship with all of my girlfriends, Christmas cards, telephone calls, and we would bring each other up to date. But I didn't know exactly what to do about that. I did not plan to ever let them go out of my life. There was one girl in particular, Vicky, that I told you about, who I felt that I owed a great debt to, because she had been such a wonderful friend. I wasn't about to drop her or let her friendship evaporate. However, she ended up working for Federal Reserve for 30 years and never had a family of her, no children. She married a German, a real German, you know, with the blonde hair and the blue eyes and all. But they agreed never to have children. So she was very busy working, and Germans are a little different. So we drifted apart, but yet we still kept in touch. The girlfriends that stayed in Los Angeles who had a family, you know, we continued with telephone calls and promising to have lunch someday, but we never did. Still, we still tried to keep on with our friendships. I'm glad I did it. I'm glad I did it. I hope they are too. Anyway, the real social life that I had to, and that I really worked on, were all Anglos. And I was trying to become an Anglo wife. And it's a wonder I didn't bleach my hair. Oh, golly, my mother must have suffered. But I didn't let her go. He liked my mother. He didn't like my brother. And he had iffy feelings about my sister-in-law, my sister, and he didn't especially like my brother-in-law, so there were problems. My sister noticed it. And as I say, we're proud people, so it's kind of a bitter pill that we had to live with, and it just stuck here and never went down. So I visited my family, but he didn't go, things like that, you know. That's what happens when you have interracial marriages. I think I'll say that. But you see, I had already tried to leave him. I had already been through all of that. And if I hadn't done it, by the time my children were growing, they had become attached to him. I started to bend over backwards to please. And in a way, I don't know if I did right or wrong. I think I hurt myself. Because I started to become something I wasn't, really. And so I became a student, a constant student, you know, trying to emulate my new neighbors. And you see, the only reason I even noticed that I was doing this was because I felt that he was watching me, mm-hmm. to see how I fit in. So I wanted him to think, oh, they like me, they accept me. Well, not everybody does. And there were finally just a few that I got along with well. And that was the Polish girl across the street who I thought very much of, and she seemed to like me, and the kids were good friends, they played together. And then the nurse that I liked so very much, and the next door was a Jewish girl and a Jewish man. But they were so nice, and I liked them an awful lot, and we were good friends. See, we were right here, the three, and the Polish girl. For some reason, the house over here on the corner, I never knew who lived there. You know, I don't, maybe it's the way it faced or what, but it was an empty house as far as I was concerned. I never knew the people there. They must have had friends on up the block.
What kinds of things would you do with the other women on the block that you got to be with?
We were too busy to have any kind of social life. All we ever did was babysit for one another so one could go to the store, or if I had a car, I would take her to the store, the one who couldn't get to the store. I mean, these were, survival things. I mean, we couldn't be sociable on a high plane. Even the college-educated women realized that, you know. They started giving me a lot of hints on gardening, because I knew from nothing. I had never gardened in my life, and they did. They came from families whose mothers had gardened. Well, I didn't. My mother didn't garden. And, cultivate and have. And so I started reading books on how to plant a garden. And I ended up with perennials, anything that would stay green the whole year, you know, because I couldn't figure out the seasons. I didn't know. And neither did they, really, come to think of it, because it's different back east. So I planted things. I went to the nursery a lot, and I asked a lot of questions, and ended up with a lot of ivy. And I had a beautiful umbrella tree that was just a stick when I planted it, and it grew into an umbrella, like the shape of an umbrella. A very slow growing tree, but I loved it.
With the yard pretty much up to you to take care of, or did your husband have any?
Well, he sowed the seed. You know, we turned into farmers, and I still had two babies to take care of, so I was with the baby, with the groceries, with the cleaning, and with the house, and with the yard, and the hard work was getting it ready for the grass, and then putting in borders and things like that. So he worked and I worked, and then of course I used to like to surprise him when he was gone 24 hours. I used to like to weed a great big patch, you know, so when he came home I could show him that I had done all that, you know, and he wouldn't have to do it. I was showing off. Sometimes I'd get out there and mow the lawn when I really shouldn't have, because we didn't have power mowers. We had kind of pushed. And so I think I was trying to show off. I was cleaning like crazy windows, and it was sort of a contest to see who had the best looking, cleanest house, the best garden, and the prettiest children, But the fathers wanted grades. After the kids went to school, then the grades became very important. And fortunately for us, the school that was planned for the community was opened the semester that they were all the same age, Terry's age, that they started school. So they all went to school together. And of course, the psychologist's wife knew that her kids were going to be top-notch. I was already beginning to have my doubts about mine. And she was very uppity. So, I don't know, I began to dislike her. Because I wasn't that crazy about child psychology. I didn't think it was fair to the kids to have to excel at everything, and I sort of criticized him to myself a little bit, and so did the Polish girl. So we had that much in common. So when, of course, their kids started doing very well in school, and they were bragging about the report cards, Stella would say, "Well, sure they do well in school. Their father sits there every night and sees to it that they do well in school." So. Anyway, she was the one that ended up having to get a divorce. And in the meantime,
she's Stella.
This is Stella, and I guess I was drawn to he was a nightclub entertainer. And when you say that we had gatherings, yes, he was an extrovert, and he would have the people over, and he would play the piano, And she was a beautiful housekeeper and a good cook. And their house shaped up very fast. I mean, a patio, and he was getting ready to put it in a pool, and the flowers, and everything was gorgeous. And he used to love to invite everybody over and entertain us. So I was very impressed by everybody there. We were nothing, you know, we couldn't entertain anybody, you know. You talk about entertainment, what did I offer them? Enchiladas, or something, you know, I didn't even know how to make them. I know somebody mentioned, they all knew that I was Mexican, and they were all curious about the food, because they'd heard that it was good, and I didn't know how to cook it the way my grandmother did. And I used to think, well, I'm not going to have a taco party, you know. I don't know how to make them very well, and I didn't think that I should. But I did have birthday parties for my children, and they had birthday parties for theirs. You saw a picture of Terry sitting there, and that was at a birthday party. And, of course, the kids had their fights, and they had their good times, and it was terrible. 30 kids. You think about that. Try to get along with. Everybody had three anyway, see. Very fast, it adds up. Anyway, I got brave, and Roy and I had been talking about having another child, and we really couldn't afford it, but he kept saying he wanted a son. Thank God I had a son, because this one was a son. I had a child. And none of them, all the girls, they already had their family, either two or three. They thought I was crazy. Oh, Lord, how can you get pregnant when there's no money and the economy is already crazy? But still, they were so kind. They brought me maternity clothes. Theirs. The ones they've been saving, just in case. And they were kind, but it so happened that I had an automobile accident I took Roy's mother home with my two daughters. He had a headache, and I took, she had been over to visit for 3 or 4 days, and he couldn't take her home, so I took her home. And I was about 2 months along. And I had on the way home on a Sunday, about 5 o'clock, we had the Hollywood Freeway then, and I was on the fast lane, second to the fast lane, and a car jumped the divider. There were no barricades at the time, and he hit me. And all I had time, the minute he hit that divider, he had his brakes on, but he flew over. And I had my brakes on, so we came to a screeching stop, you see. And the kids were thrown all over the car. Scream. And I just sort of just bent over the wheel. And the first thing I thought about was, I'm going to lose the baby, you know. And the kids were screaming. But anyway, I hurt I think I had already had a bad back, but that did it. I mean, something happened. And from that time, I did almost nearly lose a baby, but I didn't. And all through the pregnancy, I had a very bad pregnancy because I had a terrific backache. The backache was worse during labor than the labor pain. So if you can imagine that. I must have slipped a disc or crushed or something. Very bad. And then Roy had an accident at the fire station. Things were beginning to really go bad. Our luck was turning. I mean, we just sort of became hard luck children, you know? Here I am about this size, say I'm 7 months along, with a bad back and two children struggling. And Roy has an accident at his job. He had gone into a warehouse and a beam fell on him. And already, you know, I get these, I don't know, strain, I guess. And he went into the hospital. And there you have good neighbors again. Sure, they're wonderful people. I mean, they came over, cut our lawn, and offered to help with the children if I needed to go see Roy. I thought they were wonderful people, just wonderful. But he came home and he was all bent out of shape with a bad back. And of course, anybody who has a nervous condition anyway, and then has a bad back, is hard. And then my back was bad. So anyway, Roy and I became very concerned about our backs. And I was so happy because his back remained bad. Mine got better after I had the baby. It was the pressure of the baby that was pulling my spine forward that was really giving me the trouble. After the baby was born, I was all right. But he deteriorated. His back condition got worse. And, anyway, I started to feel sorry for myself. And he became morose and not too happy. And the tensions were growing, too, in the neighborhood because the kids were older and they were beginning to fight. And Terry and Jeannie would come home crying because things weren't going right. The divorce in front, the family in front of my house was disintegrating. And so, you see, I hardly saw any of the family, his or mine. Understand? Mm-hmm. If I went to see my family, I went alone with my children when he worked. Like, if he worked on a Sunday, I would pack the kids up for the day, rations for the day, and spend the day with my mother, and then I'd come home that night. And it did me a world of good because I could relax again. I always felt like I was on, you know, when I lived over here. And I felt cramped. I started to feel cramped, nervous. And I didn't think that I was... I kept thinking, well, I'm living to please the neighbors, you know, and I'm not even living for us. So I started to, I asked him, well, he hated the house by then. He said it was a horrible track house, and it was just horrible. He hated everybody there and the neighborhood and everybody. He loved John. Oh, the minute John was born, he just idolized him. So it's, yeah, he really does to this day. So I was so happy I had a son anyway for him. And so I started looking for a place to move to where it would be a little more peaceful and where the kids would have more room to play and not have so many squabbles. And that's why I started looking over in this area, because this is Sepulveda, and it's rural. And I fell in love with this house when I saw it, but I didn't think we could afford it, so I put it out of my head. But the people, it just so happened that the house was for sale by owner, and I came across it by mistake. I looked at the house next door. It was for sale by owner. And they didn't, I had three kids in the car, and I guess they felt the heck with her. I'm not going to invite her in, or the kids. And, but this man next door called me over and invited me into this house, and he said, bring the kids in. And she was sitting here, and I was impressed. I liked the house, and with her, she showed me every cupboard, and they really wanted to sell because it was just the two of them mm-hmm. in this big house. And to me, it was perfect because it was so quiet, and I thought, oh, gee, a cul-de-sac, and the kids can play, and no worries. And but their price was, I think, 22 something thousand. And we didn't have that much equity in our house, although the market for the homes was going up. We paid $10,000, and they were beginning to sell for $14,000, and we owed $8,000. So you see, we had that much equity in our house. But if a realtor sold it, he would take so much out of it that I just didn't think we could afford this house. But the people here took my telephone number, and I took theirs, and I was going to call them and tell them that we couldn't afford to buy their house. But they called us, and they wanted to see our house because I had told them that our house was too small. And it really was, with three children. And they wanted a smaller house, and if they liked our house, maybe we could do something about it. That's the way they put it. They did it all. So they came over that night, and they were in sort of a party mood. They had been out to dinner, and they'd had a few drinks, and they loved the house. And fortunately, it was clean. You know, it was... God, it was hard with three kids, you know, it was perfect. The kids were in their night clothes, they'd been bathed, and everything was nice, the dishes were put away, and the house was 7 years old, so it needed work on the outside, everything, it just wasn't quite up to par. Neither Roy or I were that good at gardening. Nothing blossomed. We just didn't have the green thumb. And anyway, they bought it. I mean, right there and then they said, we'll give you $14,000, you know, for it, and we'll work something out with whatever you owe. If you want to borrow the money and pay us later, you can. So here we are dealing, owner to owner, right? And we thought it was fair. Roy had already been out here looking at the front of the house, and he liked the house. The kids liked the house. It was a nice yard, and you see, she had shown them everything. And they were begging, you know, let's move, please. We can have our own bedroom. And you know, you build things up in your head. Everything's in a paradise. It's waiting. And to me, it was my dream house. And so... we went to an escrow, the same escrow. We switched equity, so we saved money on that. And in May, April really is when we made the deal, and I asked her if she wouldn't wait until June so the kids could finish their semesters at school. And she said no. She's not agreeable there. She said no. But she wanted to move right away because she had a lot of plans for the house. So then we had to set a day to move because as we emptied a room, they moved that room in. And we tried to move in as they moved out. So you had trucks going. I mean, well, we had those U-Hauls. And again, you see, nobody ever paid anybody to do anything. Your friends helped you there, you know. So again, Roy's whatever few friends helped us there. And my truest friends are the ones still from West Covina's Whittier. They're the ones that came out. A family came out. And he helped. And she helped me. You know, I had packed everything. So it was a matter of getting everything in and here. But this lady was faster and more efficient, and my God, she was calling constantly because she wanted... We were in this house by noon. Let me tell you how fast a move that was. We had lunch here. But she was on the phone at 7 o'clock in the morning, you know, just the two of them. I had three kids to feed. I had breakfast that they had to eat and dress and all. So I said, please, 8 o'clock, you know, can we start it? By then, Eileen and Gordon had shown up, and two fellows from the neighborhood were going to help us, and everybody's standing there waiting. And we worked like dogs, and we had lunch in this house. And they had lunch in the house, and we exchanged keys. And she left her drapes, and I left my drapes. We left all the lights, and we helped each other as much as we could. And after lunch, Eileen and Gordon and everybody else got tired. I mean, I had just, all I did was open tuna cans, and I had mayonnaise and bread. I had anticipated that that might happen, you know, and beer for the men, right? And then I was here with all my packages to unpack, and it took me a while to rotate everything. But I did all the work after that. Roy never got involved in anything, you know. He just figured, well, we moved, and we're there. So now you take over. And I did. But I had to keep the kids in their schools. I didn't want to take them out in May. So I had to travel. Terry was in Catholic school at the time. So I had two schools to deliver them to, and two schools to pick them up from. So I was going quite a bit. And I had John with me, a little, I think he was 3. And he was traveling a lot until school let out. And that is when I really started to really work here, and I mean settle in. And the kids, it was a relief to me by then to get away from the hassle of the fighting of the kids and